Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, the show where we talk about video games, we cover the news from the past couple of weeks, and try to give it a little bit of an analysis and see what does it mean. We sort of ask the question, what does it mean when Sony announces something, or when Nintendo does crappy smartphone games? And we let go of our hate and anger and just try to understand. That is the case for me. We're going to see if Scott Johnson, my co-host for the day, is going to manage to let go of his anger towards Nintendo. Oh,
I don't know if I can. I don't know. It's just been brewing in me so long that I'm ready to turn green and be angry. No, I don't freaking in.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think it's not as bad, you know, because they announced their first smartphone game and it's not what some might have expected. Before that, we're going to go over what happened in at the Paris Games Week. We're going to go over our second impressions of Overwatch. And at the end of the show, we're going to do a end of year release bingo. So we're going to tell you if we're just getting the games, if we're putting them in our Christmas list, or if we're just not interested.
Hopefully what's crazy is it's that time of year. Like, we're kind of there now where all those final releases are just about to hit, and it feels like it got here way too fast. It's just freaking out a little bit.
So many games to play. It's pretty incredible. We're going to go over through the October, November, and the one December release. So we'll go over everything.
Oh.
Let's start, though, with the Paris Games Week and the Sony press conference that was given there. The Paris Games Week is a pretty substantial consumer show. It's smaller than something like Gamescom, which is a sweaty German people feast. It's it is kind of disgusting. Paris Games Week is about, so just so you get an idea, Gamescom is 350,000 visitors. Of course, the people who go there multiple times, multiple days, get counted multiple times. Same for Paris Games Week, which is 250,000 or more or less. So wow, it's not nothing.
That's not big. That's not nothing. That's huge. That's actually a really big number. That's gigantic.
I think a lot of people don't realize the love that people have for video games in France. It's really a healthy ecosystem there. And, you know, we have Ubisoft, which is one of the biggest publishers in the industry. And there's a very, you know, core love for gaming and all things tech. So.
That's great. Well, way to go, France. You're blowing us away at every turn.
Well, maybe not every turn, but so it was nice, actually, of Sony. They did a little bit of a France special at the end of their press conference there. They introduced a couple of games that were created by French companies. The first one is Wild by Wild Sheep, which is the company of Michel Ancel, who you probably don't know, but he created Rayman, so that's something that...
I'm fully aware of that guy. I freaking love him. I think the Rayman series is one of the most delightful things in the history of ever. And he is, as far as I'm concerned, in gaming circles here in the States, he is one of those guys everyone holds high. He's awesome.
Nice. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. Proving me wrong again. and the other one was Detroit by Quantic Dreams, which is the company from David Cage, who did things like Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls, stuff like that. So both of those are PlayStation exclusives. Wild is a weird little game where you play a shaman trying to save the people of your tribe, and you go in and basically take control of different animals to traverse the environment, overcome the obstacles that are put in front of you, including a tribe of cannibals, which you distract with a rabbit. That was kind of cool. And Detroit is not, I mean, usually David Cage does games that are very narrative driven. They're almost interactive storytelling things more than gameplay focused games. And in this case, it seems to be, again, a similar kind of design where you play or you follow an android in a futuristic Detroit, which is aware of her condition as an android and trying to understand what having a conscience and being human means in the middle of the city where androids are being used for, you know, tasks that humans don't want to do and things like that.
And this is so far future. Do we know? This is the one I know precious little about. Do we know how far in the future this is set?
It seems relatively near future. Obviously, there are androids, human-looking android, not human-licking androids, although maybe they do that
first.
Too.
Yeah, those will come first. You just wait.
So it's not too far flung future, maybe 50, 70 years, something like that. It looks like our present time, except there's androids and the kind of things that you see in those movies, which are usually ads in the street that are holographic. And that's about the level of technology that they have come to.
Yeah.
So so did you see the demo or the gameplay video for Wild? Were interested?
I did watch some of that. I think that looks pretty interesting. I think, that's an exclusive, right?
Yeah, both of those are exclusives.
I would assume most of these that they're showing off, or a lot of this stuff that they're talking about, are exclusives. I'm noticing in both cases, and in just kind of in general, while these, I don't know, I wouldn't classify these as AAA titles, although they may, in quality and reception, be perceived as such or even priced as such. But I'm seeing a real trend on the Sony side and maybe even the Microsoft side and other sides. I'm just seeing a real trend toward games and experiences from developers who are veterans but are kind of off on their own now or doing some stuff separate from their old big corporate overlords, and they all feel conceptually a little more independent. And I think that's interesting. It's interesting to see what I perceive as the entire industry taking a few steps back from multi-million-dollar celebrity voice acted motion captured spectacles and stepping back toward more conceptually interesting, slightly, I don't know, everything just kind of,
basically, I think what you're trying to get at is that they're games from auteurs, right?
Yeah.
When we have in the movies, we have that. And sometimes they're high quality, but they have a artistic intent, I guess.
Sure.
Behind them?
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm getting out of it. And and that gives it that kind of indie feel, because indie developers are all about that. It's like two guys in a garage and they make Meat Boy, and it's always, it's their project. And there weren't, 500 suits in charge of what direction they took. And I'm starting to feel like that's starting to happen here. It is like a filmmaker who you're used to seeing nothing but big blockbusters from breaking off and doing a little thing that he's wanted to do for years or something. And I like this. This is a trend I'm kind of all for. I feel like it's economically sensible in terms of where the industry is headed, but also I like it from a creative perspective. And so I'm jazzed about titles like this. I think this stuff looks great.
I think it also makes sense for the manufacturers, for Sony and Microsoft. And it seems Sony is pushing this maybe a little bit harder than Microsoft, who's doing a little bit more of a catching up. Because the way it makes sense is that obviously the AAAs are going to be on every console. Or most of them, they can pay a lot of money to get some timed exclusivity or, maybe even total exclusivity, but usually that's reserved for their own productions, for first party developers. But there's something in the middle between the AAAs that are going to be everywhere, like Call of Duty or, Destiny, things like that, and their first party developers. There's the totally indie stuff in the background, which you mentioned with Super Meat Boy, maybe Microsoft has been, pushing ID at Xbox for a while, and they had the what was that game that was so pretty that came out exclusively on Ori and the Blind Forest.
Ori and the Blind Forest. That was a fantastic game. Ex-Blizzard people made that, by the way.
Oh, really? I didn't realize.
Yeah. Well, according to Holinka over there, Brian over there at Blizzard, they are all ex-employees, and they make that. It made a pretty amazing game.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, there's an in-between space, which is, games with that kind of artistic intent that the manufacturers can snag by getting maybe a little bit less of exclusivity money, because of course I'm sure there's money exchanging hands there in some form. Maybe it's marketing money, maybe, we don't know, but I'm sure there is something. And they get it gives their console an identity, and it gives them something that makes them a little bit different beyond the AAA first party titles. So I think that's why we're seeing these maybe pop up a little bit more. And, the fact that you have some developers that have been in those big production companies for a while and that are thinking, okay, now I want to do something that I actually want to do. Good context for that to happen.
Sure.
Uncharted 4, they said a little bit more about the multiplayer mode, and I think a lot of people, when they think of Uncharted, they don't really see the multiplayer as being anything, not even special, just anything at all. But it seems there are people that are really into the multiplayer for Uncharted, and I have to say that I played a little bit of the Uncharted 2 multiplayer, actually with Hokito. And I think they were really into this. I think Nicole Spag also played it for a while. It's surprisingly fun and addictive. You look at Uncharted, you wouldn't think that the multiplayer would be a thing even there, but it's actually pretty good. And in this version, they're adding things like grappling hooks and abilities that are basically AI-controlled sidekicks that come into the play and do something for you, like holding the opponent in place so you can go and shoot them, or healing you and stuff like that. And they even added mystical abilities that basically introduce some kind of supernatural powers into the game that are, I think, that might be reminiscent of the super or ultimates that we're seeing in Destiny or even Overwatch. So that brings it a little bit more... it makes it a little bit more dynamic, and I'm actually surprised that I'm looking forward to trying it as well.
Yeah, I played a ton of that multiplayer back in the day with Hokito and the Spags and Liam O'Brien and a few other people, where we were very regularly getting in there and playing that game, and it was surprising how much fun we had with the multiplayer. And I don't know what it was, but they built some modes around the traversal stuff that just made it feel a little bit different than your usual sort of, deathmatch mode in an otherwise mostly single player game. So the fact that they're putting some emphasis on it is a good thing. I think that you want a game, especially with big AAA titles now, you want a game that's going to have a little more lasting power than just the initial blast. And they had some pretty good response also from the multiplayer in Last of Us. There were many, many people who were very devoted to that multiplayer mode.
Oh, really? I never even tried it. I didn't realize there was one.
Yeah, it's quite good. It was very tactical, very visceral, kind of hard to explain. It was much less twitchy and a lot more about how you had to think and understand how the characters moved. And if you're moving slowly, you're really going to put yourself in an exposed position, and just much more tactical experience than people were maybe used to with that sort of game. And it was fascinating. And they spent a lot of time updating that and tweaking it and making it better. So I have no doubt that Naughty Dog is interested in keeping, keeping players happy on that front, because they've done a pretty good job in the past. It just doesn't... It's just the kind of games that don't, automatically make you think multiplayer. Yeah. On the face of it, you're like, wow, big epic storyline, amazing characters and all of that. Oh, there's multiplayer. Interesting. It's probably just tacked on there. But the truth is, they really don't just tack it on. It's pretty strong.
And I think a lot of people are going to, I mean, no one's going to get this game for the multiplayer, but I think a few people are going to get it for the single player and maybe now get interested in the multiplayer because they're pushing it a little bit more. And by the way, there's one thing that is really fun that I enjoyed in that gameplay video they showed is the dialogue. I always enjoy the wittiness of the dialogue in Uncharted, maybe even more than the game itself. And the fact that there's some form of that in the multiplayer is actually making me more interested in it. So,
And it does seem like, I don't know, you get more for $60 if you know they're spending real time on it, that it isn't just something they think they'll put in there as a little bonus. And I like that. And those guys, I mean, look, they're as good as anybody is right now in the business. At least it feels like it. And Uncharted 4, despite the huge amount of hype around it, they have a good pedigree. They've delivered before. So everything about that game is exciting to me, and I'm very excited for 2016 as a result.
Same here. Gravity Rush 2 had a short gameplay demo. They showed that, if you don't know what Gravity Rush is, it was that weird little PlayStation Vita game that didn't do incredibly well, but that did get a core fan base that really loves the game. It's coming to PlayStation 4 as a remake, and Gravity Rush 2 is coming out afterwards. There are three gravity styles. Basically, you control your character and you control the gravity around her, which sounds weird. And honestly, the gameplay didn't convince me in the Vita game, but maybe I'm going to check it out for sure on this one. So you have different styles of gravity, either, you know, lighter or heavier. And there's an AI tag team mode that they showed. And I'm wondering if this isn't going to turn into a co-op mode. I would be surprised if it didn't, because it seems to make a lot of sense for a co-op mode. And they're really playing up the second character that you can play. If you're a fan of Gravity Rush, you can look forward to that. Did you ever play it?
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that. I played the crap out of it on the Vita, and I was compelled by everything about that game except its frame rate. It kind of hampered it a bit. It was a little bit slow and sloppy. So I'm hoping that, you know, current gen console and, you know, optimization and everything else will make it a little better in that regard. But the actual gameplay, the mechanics, and just the weird world that thing was set in, really compelling. So,
but what's the gameplay like then? Because I don't even, you know, I remember flinging myself from one wall to the other and not being certain where I was going or what I was doing even. And
yeah, it's a little disorienting for sure. It's that kind of game that, it challenges your perceptions in 3D space, which, again, I quite liked about it. But you had a lot of limitations. Like you could essentially change your gravity so that you could be standing on what used to be a ceiling or a surface that shouldn't be able to be stood upon. But you could only do it for a limited amount of time, or else you would fall. Eventually, it would kind of lose its grip. And you would upgrade your character through the game to have that time be longer and other abilities that sort of maximized your time in that space. But it created really interesting scenarios for combat, and the exploration factor just was really fascinating. I don't even know what to compare it to. It just felt like, I don't know, like almost like you were jumping around in free space, and then, you know, what is up and what is down would change depending on what scene you were in. And I don't know, there was like, something definitely there. I think obviously something was there. I don't think they'd be bothering with this follow-up.
Yeah, maybe like Descent. Do you remember Descent?
Yeah, very much like Descent. In fact, I was just thinking Descent, and I was going to bring it up, but then I changed my mind because I was thinking, oh, that's too old and obscure.
Patrick, well, digging that. They're doing a remake. They're doing a remake of Descent. They're doing a remake of Kickoff, if you remember that old Amiga game. And which one? Oh, Shadow of the Beast had a new trailer as well. So old stuff coming back.
Yeah, old stuff. It's all coming back. Catch it.
Street Fighter 5. Oh, no, sorry. Before Street Fighter 5, we have a release date for No Man's Sky, finally. Yeah. And it's June 2016. Aww. Everyone seemed to be collectively disappointed. I think the hype for that game has been so high that now it's sort of dying down a little bit. And people are just like, all right, fine, whatever. Just give us the game. That's it. We don't, you know. And I think it's good that they're delaying it because it's a very complex game to create gameplay around, apparently. And they have to get it right. But I don't think we want any trailers anymore. At this point, we're just going to wait, forget about it, wait until it comes out. And hype is not working anymore, right?
is so interesting because it's not, it's almost like they're anti-hyping it, which is hyping it more. Because everything they've done for that thing has always been that soft-spoken lead developer guy that gets out on stage and his corduroy shirt and just kind of chilling out saying, yeah, well, this is a game we're excited about. I mean, he's not over the top about it. He shows enough to get people kind of tweaked. And for whatever reason, we have made this out to be the game that, you know, Lord Zeus will hand down from the clouds when it's completed. And I wonder a little bit if the delay, or not delay, but the time that from announcement or when we first heard about it until June 2016 might be because they are trying really hard to figure things out to match the hype, to find a way to nail the same or to get it where people have put it in their own heads. Because I don't feel like they haven't been the ones that have made it so hypey. We've kind of done that. They've given us less, yeah, by them giving us less information, but tantalizing glimpses, they have overhyped a game, and that's a very strange thing to do. So, yeah, either way, I'm jazzed. I can't wait to finally play that game. And that'll be, they keep saying, and I assume this is still true, they're aiming for a simultaneous PC and PlayStation 4 release. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm looking forward to it as well. Delayed to June 2016, I'm not too miffed because there are so many things coming out this holiday season. I think, you know, we have enough to play for now.
Yeah.
Gran Turismo Sport, which is basically Gran Turismo 7, was announced. There's a beta coming Q1, and it's going to include a VR experience. And there's going to be basically, it focuses on motorsports, you know, racing. And there's going to be a Nation Cup where you can play for your country, and a Manufacturer's Cup where you can play for, you know, a manufacturer you like. And they are going to go, you know, year-long championships with real life championship and prizes and stuff like that. I feel like, you know, I was saying that about Need for Speed. Racing games are still a thing, of course, but there was a time in the 2000s with Need for Speed Underground where, and you know, in the 90s with Gran Turismo, where it was a thing that everyone was playing. And I don't think it's quite that anymore. There are fans, but I'm not super, you know, excited about Gran Turismo announcements anymore. And I'm played not, the crap out of it when it first came out.
You sure. know? I'm not either so much. It's interesting. The driving genre is interesting because as the fidelity of consoles and PCs and devices and VR and everything get more and more a high fidelity, you would expect that something like a racing genre would benefit the most from this increase in fidelity. And it's interesting that it's kind of just kind of stagnated a little bit. Nobody's that interested in it. And I don't know why. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I am, as a player, not that interested either. But the other, moreover, I was never totally all that interested in a racing game that was so focused on realism. I'm much more a Burnout kind of guy. I love Burnout Paradise and all the Burnout games, and Need for Speed to some degree. At least some of their games hit it and some don't. But I'm way more on that side of things and to focus on the fun factor rather than the simulation. But I also understand the simulation is a, you know, there's a huge bunch of people who love simulated driving. So what excites me about this, not as a player of the game, but as someone who's interested to seeing what Sony does with the franchise, is this feels like they're establishing it as a platform and less of a serialized game. So they're saying, all right, we're calling it Sport. That to me feels like them saying, here is a new game that we will now milk for a long time and build stuff around it with maybe even esports component, it sounds like. Some sort of real-life competitive something. That's much more than just a, here's a sequel, and after that's done, wait a couple more years, and we'll have another sequel kind of plan. So if anything, this feels like platform making, and I think that's probably good for this genre and for this game.
Yeah, you're right. They're probably recognizing that it's a dedicated audience, more dedicated than before, audience that's going to get into it and that's going to get very much into it. And they're saying, well, there you go. It's going to be maybe a service kind of, well, not a service in the sense that you're going to keep paying for it. But what you said, basically.
Yeah, and there are other games like that, and I can't think of any of them off the top of my head right now. But there are others who are, you know, they establish I don't know, a baseline, and then they just sort of build on top of that. I guess MMOs are a good example.
MMOs, I suppose, you know, even MOBAs to an extent.
Or Destiny is kind of that way, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
And MOBAs, sure. Like, the games that allow you to make a kind of a core thing and then expand upon that through DLC or expansions or whatever it is for a very long time, that seems smart and wise. It would be interesting if they launched this game. I don't think they will, so I want to make that clear right off the top of the bat. But it'd be really interesting if they released this game as a free-to-play driving game and you just purchased cars or, you know, microtransacted how it looked.
Championships would be, that would be weird.
It would be a little bit weird, yeah. You'd have to, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's any more weird than, you know, MOBAs and buying / golding all the characters that you have or something. I don't know. It could be an interesting way for that space to go. But that does seem to be what's happening. You see genres that used to be $60 games becoming games that are essentially free to play with some kind of, you know, other payment model. And that's applying to, you know, MOBAs certainly have kind of came out of the gate that way. But shooters are sort of that way now. I know we're going to talk about Overwatch here in a minute, but you know, I'm
Street Fighter as well. Street Fighter 5 is going to follow that model. It's going to be a game that you pay for, and then you can add additional characters.
So they're kind of going in the middle. They're starting in the middle a little bit with that to see kind of, I think they're testing the water, but it's interesting to see the genres that are, that used to be just these full experiences that are now like, they make sense with these new pay models. And I'm not wholly convinced that Gran Turismo couldn't fit in there nicely. So we'll see.
Maybe. Let's go quickly over Dreams, that game from Media Molecule that made Tearaway and, of course, Little Big Planet. There was a gameplay video again that was, I don't know, I think, you know, I didn't really love Little Big Planet. I didn't love Tearaway. I understand the dreaminess of those worlds and what they're trying to do. But I'm not sure it's going to work in this environment where they're saying you can create a game and you can create art and you can create. And I don't know that it's going to work. But again, I think it's interesting that Sony is pushing this and keeps pushing this. I think it gives their console, it's branding, basically. It gives their console a different image. I don't know if you're more into those, but.
Well, it's like we make weird stuff and it's all edgy and strange. And that's always kind of been Sony's thing, I would say, since really like Shadow of the Colossus and that kind of era from PS2 era. That's when I started to go, yeah, Sony's got a weird, they've got a side to them that is experimental.
Well, Ico, really, but
Ico is more, that kind of started it all. But that sensibility has carried through their consoles all the way up till current. And I'm glad about that. I know that's not everyone's cup of tea. It's, you know, some people just all sports and all Gears of War and all, you know, Halo or whatever. But I'm a big fan of these offshoots and these strange directions. So none of this is bad for me. I loved Little Big Planet for what they were trying to do, but I'm never going to call that like a great platformer by any means. I really liked Tearaway though, quite a bit. I thought Tearaway was just fantastic. So while I'm interested in this, everything I've seen on this just strikes me as conceptual and not a game.
Yeah, so yeah, same for me. That's why I'm worried.
Yeah, I just don't know what to make of it. Maybe, you know, in my hands, I'll feel differently. Clearly, aesthetically, they're doing some things I haven't ever seen before, and I appreciate it on that level already, but I don't know about the game. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Street Fighter V is coming out February 16. Woohoo! Hype!
Yeah, you love Street Fighter. You're excited.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was a huge Street Fighter 2 player back in the day. I love fighting games. You know, we were talking about the thing with car games that were a thing everyone was doing back in the day. Fighting games were in the same spot. Everyone was playing those in the 90s and maybe even early 2000s. And now, not so much. It's been, you know, Street Fighter 4 has sort of brought them back to the forefront, but not quite to everyone. I'm thinking Street Fighter 5 might get some people who were playing Street Fighter 2 or, you know, 3 back into it and who are still, you know, core gamers back into it. And I've played the 2 betas quite a bit, and it's a lot easier to get into. It's not as hardcore as Street Fighter 4 was. You can do stuff a lot more easily. It's still a fighting game, but
How was that second beta phase? Was it better than the first? That first one?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's what the betas are for, but the second one worked a lot better. There were, you know, hiccups here and there, but it did work a lot better. I'm confident they will have it done by February 16. They still have a third beta phase, so... And so they announced February 16, they announced they're going to have 6 characters, additional characters, that are going to come out in the first year. You can buy those with fight money, which is the virtual currency in the game, or with real money. And you can earn that virtual currency by doing daily challenges. We were talking about the possibility of having daily quests, kind of, and that's been confirmed. And you can also earn money by playing the characters, and they will put the emphasis on playing different characters. You're not going to be able to get the same amount of money if you focus on just one character. I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. And I think there is, it's what you were talking about, what we were talking about earlier, that middle ground between free to play and game as a service. And I think it makes sense. You give people 16 characters to start with, and then you can sell additional characters afterwards, and they can buy them with money if they play enough, or I mean, with virtual currency if they play enough, or real money if they don't have time. And the game is, again, really fun from the experience I've had in the beta. So, yeah, I am looking
forward to it. It'd be really fascinating to see if that works well for them to sell. Basically, what you're paying for is a stable of characters and stages in the initial payment. So you're paying for that, and you get that, and that seems like a big solid experience. And then as new characters are introduced or released, paying for those moving forward, this could very well possibly be the model for Overwatch and shooters like it. Because this is the one thing we haven't talked about with that game is, you know, we've talked about all the other kind of models that could possibly apply to this, but one of them could be a, you know, $49 core game, which includes the entire starting roster. And then as new characters are released, rather than waiting for expansion packs, you purchase those piecemeal. That makes kind of sense to me in that genre as much as it might in fighting. But maybe the industry needs to wait to see how Capcom pulls this off, or if it works for them and is successful before anyone adopts it. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, for me, I think Overwatch will be free with a certain number of characters initially, and then you can buy more. But yeah, we'll see. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And then we have Tekken 7 finally announced for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, by the way. There was very little doubt that it was going to come. I still like Tekken. I think it's a little bit more hardcore than Street Fighter. But, you know, it's still a fun game. They did announce it was going to come with VR experiences in it. And I'm not sure what that's going to mean. It's probably going to be a side thing. Harada's team has been working on Summer Lesson, that VR experience when you tutor a bunch of high school girls, which honestly makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But they've been working on it. I think, you know, Tekken always has had some weird side games like Tekken Ball and Tekken Bowl and a bunch of things. I think it's probably going to be a side experience. But I'm curious to see what it is. And, of course, I'm looking forward to the actual game. They didn't give a date, though.
Yeah, I'm actually fine with... This is one thing that I've heard some criticism about, but I think it's more just the terminology. But I like the idea of most games admitting that they're not good VR games moving forward with Morpheus, or rather PlayStation VR. And rather they just say, yeah, but we'll include a little something, you know, and I think that's cool. Like I like the idea that I can buy a Tekken game and know that the Morpheus, which I purchased for all these pure VR experiences, is a thing I can pop on real quick and see what, you know, Heihachi's doing with so-and-so or whatever, whatever this dumb side thing's going to be. But they're saying it a lot with a lot of these games. It will include VR experiences. Yes, it's a little, you know, I don't know. It's a little like they're trying to coin a new phrase or something. But I don't know. I like the idea that I can explore these games in ways that I hadn't thought of, even if it's some dumb little gimmicky thing. You know, the headset is integrated in such a way. It's not like you have to do a bunch of weird setup to do something. So I think that's fine. I think that's great. That's a great way to endear the, you know, the PSVR experience to people more. And I know you're going to talk a bunch about your impressions of it, but yeah, it's dead. I'm fine with it. Bring it on. Although I am a little uncomfortable with this, the
summer lesson thing.
Yeah, a little bit. That's a little bit weird.
It is for sure. You know, that's Japan for you. But yeah, the idea that you can have VR experiences for some of the games, or, you know, maybe they're going to put some VR thing on Uncharted 4 after the fact. It would be interesting as well, because obviously it's first party developer. They want to push their VR thing. That's intriguing for sure. And so talking about the PlayStation VR, I had a chance to give it a try on a really silly, stupid game where you have to basically put soccer balls in the net with your head. It plays entirely with your head, and you have to headbutt the soccer balls as they're arriving, and it's kind of ridiculous. But it did give me a chance to evaluate the quality of the thing, and I want to say from the get-go, it has relatively bad quality on the quality of the images. It's not, maybe it's around PlayStation 3, a little bit above at this stage for graphics quality, and you can absolutely see the pixels on the screen. But I don't think any of this matters, because the key thing is the latency in those experiences. And there is absolutely none. And I was floored by that fact. I've tried, you know, the DK1, the development kit one for the Oculus Rift, and it didn't work for me for a bunch of reasons. It was, you know, it's very old, so the technology wasn't there yet, but it didn't work for me. It felt like I had a TV 2 inches from my eyes. It didn't give me the 3D effect at all. And I have apparently minor depth perception issues, so maybe it wasn't perfect enough for me to get it. But with the PlayStation VR, not only did it work, and I'm sure you know that all of the models now work, but with the PlayStation VR, the PlayStation itself being of limited power, it's a mid-range PC from 2 years ago. So you might think it's completely crap. Actually, because it's dedicated hardware and they know how to use it, it performs pretty well. But more importantly, as I was saying, latency is non-existent. So when you move your head, the image actually is completely stable. It is where it should be, and it contributes to the feeling of immersion incredibly. I mean, it does a lot more for your immersion than a super fine screens where you don't see the pixels, or breathtaking graphics that make it seem like it's real. I'm sure, you know, obviously if you have those, it's better. But if you have to choose one, the latency, I think, is what you need to get right. And
yeah, especially in this first stab, for this first rollout from all these companies, I want that immersion and that presence to be paramount. I don't care if it's in Tron world and simplified graphics are totally fine with me. If I'm in that place, then I'm doing the thing we've all dreamed of. So I'm fine with that, and I'm fine with it. I'm actually pretty pleased to hear this coming from you. I've heard you say it before, but it's nice to hear that the latency is not an issue, and that they found some equilibrium there, because that's really, really important. In fact, it's everything. And if we can't have that one-to-one sensibility with what your eyes and your brain are telling
then it
you,
doesn't
then
work.
Point. Yeah, don't even have.
And it puts Sony, I think, in a pretty interesting position in that VR war that's brewing and that's going to play out in 2016 and, you know, maybe 2017. We didn't get a date or price, by the way, for the PlayStation VR. That was a little bit of a bummer, but maybe we're going to get those at the PlayStation Experience in December that they're going to do. So basically a month away in Las Vegas, like they did last year. But it's still, you know, Q2, probably 2016. But the thing is, you have the PlayStation itself, which is $350 or euros now. And when you compare that to the price of a PC that can run an Oculus Rift or a Valve VR, you know, the HTC Vive, they're usually around the $1,000 or euros mark. And you have the PlayStation VR itself, which is probably around $300, 300 euros. That's what we're guessing it's going to be, which is expensive for sure. But it sounds like it's going to be less expensive than the more advanced headsets that are going to come out from Oculus and maybe Valve. So the graphics are going to be better on that rig that you're going to pay $300 or $400 complete for a PC version, but it's going to be a little bit worse quality. But as I was saying, the latency is good, and it's going to be half the price. And a lot of people already have PlayStations on their, under their TV. Of course, a lot of people also have PCs under their, in their office. But not a lot of those PCs can run the VR hardware and software. And it's also a lot simpler. Whatever you do, the console is going to be simpler. So I'm thinking Sony is really well positioned there. I think they might have a leg up even against the other players in that field.
I think they have an enormous advantage if they play their cards right, and if the public is ready to embrace VR and overlook one tiny detail, which is accessories after the fact for consoles have historically been a bust. Always. They never do as well as it would have been if it was a pack-in, no matter what that is, whether it's a PlayStation Move or a Kinect or a whatever. They're always and these are more modern examples, but go back in time and look at every example, even light guns and robots, they'd still never sell very well. Now, I'm not saying that won't happen here.
I think it's different here.
It may very well be. And this may be the turning point. And I just know that has to be on their minds, though, because you'll never have a one-to-one sell for sure. Like, you're going to have, let's say you've got 50 million PlayStation 4s in homes. Obviously,
okay, that's ambitious, but yeah.
Yeah, but let's just so we have an easy number. Let's say 10 million. Let's say that. It's a lot more than that, but let's say it's 10. They'd love a one-to-one. I think they'll be lucky to get like 30%.
1 to 10. Yeah, not even. I think
it's 10% or something. So it's really important for them on two fronts. One, to convince existing owners that this is a great thing to do. And, it's hard to show. So it's difficult to tell people what they're going to experience without them actually experiencing it. But then to do that in public, you got to have like kiosks with these devices and people are getting pink eye. And, there's a lot of complicated things going on with convincing the world that VR is where we're trying to tell them that it is. And I believe it is there. It's time. It's just going to be hard to tell them. So
but I think that's the same for everyone, though. All of the players in that field, it's the same for them as well.
No, you're absolutely right. And the only difference being PC enthusiasts are used to having weird hardware. I mean, they're used to going, if I really want to do this, I need that AR, whatever it is, tracking thing for this flight simulator. I've got to buy this stick for Elite Dangerous or whatever. And like they kind of already are in that world, and they're also used to spending way too much for hardware, a single video card for $450 or whatever. So in some ways they have advantages in the culture of a PC enthusiast. Yeah. But on the console side, you're trying to convince, a lot of parents and others that are just like, wait, what are we doing now? We're adding what to this thing? And it's just a little bit harder of a sale. However, if they can break through that somehow, marketing wise or just blowing people away or whatever, then they are perfectly suited to not just do well in this initial VR rollout, but perhaps lead in it and dominate it, from a broader audience perspective. And I really hope they're on it for that, because, it's very exciting to think about the simplicity of their offering versus the relative complexity of what the PC sides are going to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it is different for, the accessories add-ons to a console, because this is kind of the most equivalent to a different experience that you can have. It's not like the, what was it, the 32X on the Mega Drive that would get your games better, or a different console that's kind of, the 3DS, the new 3DS. Obviously, no one's going to develop for the new 3DS because you cut yourself away from everything on the 3DS, so you're going to develop 3DS games. In this case, it's kind of like if you want VR games, then you develop for the PlayStation VR, which happens to be using the PlayStation. I don't think many people are going to think, I could do my game for PlayStation 4, but then make it compatible for VR. Some of them might, but the people who are going to develop for PlayStation VR are going to do that. And so, yeah, I think it is a little bit different. But yeah, I agree with you.
We're also in a better place. I don't want to diminish this too, because we're in a place now where Let's Plays with people freaking out on horror games and million streams and 1,000 blogs and 1,000,000 reviews and everybody everywhere talking about stuff all the time bodes well for the accessory market in a time where good word from people you trust and respect goes a lot further than it used to. When the 32X came out for the Genesis/Mega Drive, people were like, oh yeah, that seems cool. But you're reading about it in Game Pro magazine. You weren't really, you know, if you were connected into the community of gaming, it was because of magazines and other stuff. You weren't really getting this on the internet. You didn't have the wide array of you know, people telling you what's good and what's not good. So in a way, I think this culture we live in now with all this exposure probably helps them. Assuming the experiences are, if the experiences are really compelling, then...
And that's a big if, actually. We don't know that PlayStation VR, that VR, we're excited and we think it might be the time for VR, but it might turn out that actually it's fun for 5 minutes and then you stop using it.
Yeah, there's so many questions about it. I mean, it does feel like a bit of a risk, and I'm so glad everyone's taking this risk. Clearly, it's compelling enough for them to all make very big multi-million dollar bets on this, but man, they're taking a risk on a thing that is nearly impossible to show off. And
hey, let's talk about the games they did show off, and tell me if you've been sort of intrigued by those games. They showed Rigs again, which is an esports focused 3-on-3 mech action game where it's kind of like you feel the NFL, NBA Americanness of the commentary behind the gameplay. It's you're in mechs, you're in arenas, and you have to score by getting your mech inside a specific zone. And it's perfect with the mechs, obviously, because you have, you know, giant robots, so you can move your head independently from the movement of your machine. So that's perfect for VR. There's Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, which is an offshoot of the Until Dawn horror game where you're basically on a rail shooter, and hopefully it's going to be very scary. I'm not going to play that. Robinson, which is a Crytek game, is basically a Crusoe game where you're lost in a world with dinosaurs. And there's an experience based on the movie The Walk, which apparently isn't great, but it's a guy that walks on a tightrope between buildings that are, you know, he walks 110 stories high, and you can have that experience with PlayStation VR as developed by Sony Pictures Entertainment. Any of those got you excited?
No, I mean, well, I mean, yes and no. Like, all of these are exciting to me.
I think the title of the episode might be PlayStation VR, yes and no.
Yes and no. Yeah, maybe. I mean, yes, no, or maybe is a better title. I don't know. The problem is with all of them, they sound great on paper, and I'm sure some of them are incredible. And I keep hearing things about this. Is it, what's it called? Maybe it's Oculus is doing it. Somebody's got something called Toy Box. Is that Sony?
I'm not sure,
but I keep hearing that this one experience, which is literally open a box and play with a bunch of widgets and toys.
Oh, right. I think it's Valve.
Vive. Yeah. That it's one of the most compelling things you've ever played. But on paper, it doesn't even sound like a game. It just sounds silly and, you know, like, well, it's this sort of just playing around with objects. But when you're actually in there, it's one of the most compelling experiences. So every time I hear about something that sounds like an amazing, like you could tell me Skyrim for VR is amazing, I would believe you because I've got some reference point for that. But in truth, that's probably a terrible experience. It's probably not good at all. Probably not optimized. I've played the mod on the DK1 that someone made to play Skyrim in a VR environment, and it sucked. It was horrible and made me sick. and it just doesn't work. And if you think about how that game works and how you move and what you have to do, it's not at all tailored to a VR experience. So every time I hear one that sounds good on paper, I have to think for a minute and go, no, all right, now wait a minute. Is this a forward thinking thing where they've taken into account all of the stuff?
And can you play it for more than 10 minutes without getting incredibly tired and, you know, having a heart attack? Yeah, I think the Rigs one might be heavy.
Sure. And some people really want that. So I think that's good. They're going to provide those kinds of things. But I mean, every time I talk about VR, the thing I get most excited about, and this is, I don't know what this says about me, but I'm I'm way more compelled by the things that are less video games and more exploratory experiences where I can do things.
That Robinson thing living with dinosaurs.
Yeah, and that's cool. See, that to me is the more compelling sounding experience. Now, what you actually do in there, I don't know, or what gamers will expect from that, I don't know. But, you know, if you told me, hey, Scott, here's a VR, quote unquote, experience where you get to break into a pyramid for the first time and then dig through this old tomb and open up sarcophagus and see what's in those things and find weird scarab beetles. And, you know, that to me sounds incredibly awesome, but that's not a game. It's more of a, let me look around at stuff. So that's going to be a really interesting divide, because I feel like we're going to get a ton of both of those things and people are going to have expectations. And I don't know which side I land on yet, because, you know, again, nobody's given me a complete experience. And once you've been through, you know, my scenario of going through the pyramid, once you've been through that, well, then what else do you do?
Well, so definitely yes, no, maybe.
Yeah, it's totally yes, no, maybe on your original question to get down to the brass tacks. It is totally yes, no, maybe.
All right, let's move on. I played The Division, which was interesting. You know, The Division was a game that was introduced a year and a half ago was it 2.5 years ago? I can't even remember.
Something like that. E3 of 2013.
It's a game by Ubisoft. Basically, you're in devastated New York, and it's a co-op thing, kind of half MMO. I think what they're doing is basically a Destiny-like co-op / PvP instanced game and FPS, or actually TPS. And you get into the game, and it was the Dark Zone, which is the PvP area. And they told us, you know, you don't necessarily have to kill all of the other players. You can kill the gangs that are roaming around that are basically PvE encounters, but you don't have to kill the other players. And of course, it was a game where no one cared about anything, so everyone was killing everyone. It was kind of ridiculous, but it seemed interesting. It's a lot more strategic than I thought. It's not a very action-oriented. Well, it is action, but you have to cover to be undercover. Not undercover. You have to take cover. You have to make sure you're not exposed. You have to decide who goes where and who does what. So I enjoyed the fact that it wasn't crazy shoot everything in sight necessarily in the gameplay. But ultimately, it was kind of a short experience that wasn't representative of what's going to happen when the game actually launches. So I can't say anything definitive. Obviously, for 20 minutes, you can't say anything definitive, but I'm intrigued, and I'm looking forward to see how they tackle that problem of getting people to play together, because Destiny has done that pretty well. And getting people to play together in that world. I just don't think it's going to be that incredible MMO-like experience that we envisioned initially. And I also have to say that it is a lot less incredibly pretty than it was when they first showed it. It's kind of like a good PlayStation / Xbox One game, graphics-wise. So I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued as well. And did you... So the everything I've ever heard is that it plays or feels a bit like Destiny, and that limited amount of game time. Did you come away with that feeling at all?
It's
obviously not space, and it's not, you know, crazy.
Yeah, it's not Destiny in the sense that it's not a you know, FPS action oriented like that. It's, as I was saying, it's a cover based thing, and it's a lot more slow. It's a lot slower than even Gears of War. So no, I wouldn't say it plays like Destiny on the core gameplay point of view. I think it might play like that in the sense that you explore an area and you have different portions. So when you're in the middle of a zone, you can go through a kind of a portal, and it tells you, not a portal, but a portion of the map, and it tells you, hey, you're entering the Dark Zone. So at that point, you know that you might encounter PvP experiences where you're going to get killed by other players. If you're not, you're in another area of New York, and you're staying in the zone where it's just you against the computer. I think it's going to be maybe, you know, 10, 20 players on a map, not 200 or, you know, 1,000 on the server.
But, so it's a lot more instanced, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm okay with that. I like the more thing.
It's kind of like, you know, Destiny, Phantasy Star Online, maybe even to an extent. The not Mad Max thing. Oh, my God. Mm. The Borderlands. There you go.
Oh, Borderlands. Okay.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, you can't be more than four on that.
I like the sound of that. I'm a huge Borderlands fan.
Well, just in the sense that you play against the computer.
Sure. No, I get it. Yeah, yeah. No, that's one of the things I don't know. There's a lot of things I like about Destiny, or about that, and I like about Destiny. But look, if they can bring this kind of near future, post-apocalyptic, modern guns, burnt out city, gotta survive sensibility to what is left of a military organization kind of vibe, then if they can do what they've kind of shown us and have it feel that way, the rest of it's kind of gravy. You can build good game loops around all that, and that's exciting.
Yeah, and honestly, it seemed like it worked. So we'll see. I don't know if it's going to work. You know, the thing is with these games, you play them for a very, very long time, and I'm thinking there are going to be a lot of games that are fighting for our attention in that field. So we'll see. Let's talk about Overwatch a little bit. We did talk about it for a long time on the Instance last week. I did talk about it on Overwatchers, our Overwatch podcast, which we relaunched with Garrett Weindrill. You can find it if you look for Overwatchers or go to amove.tv. And we talked about our first impressions on the Instance again, in theinstance.net. For an hour and a half or so, it was crazy. So
we donated the entire episode to it. Yeah. This was that way. Yeah.
So first and second impressions very quickly on Overwatch. You know, Overwatch is obviously the competitive or PvP FPS from Blizzard. It's been announced a year ago at BlizzCon. Oh my God, I had just started the show. Pixels had just started. It's a year old. And we played it there, and it's finally out. The beta is out. Limited amount of access. You don't have beta keys. It's just if you get flagged, if your account gets flagged, and they're flagging randomly people more and more now. Your first and second impressions on Overwatch?
All right. My first impression was I was blown away by the game, polish wise, gameplay wise. It's everything I need my favorite kind of competitive shooter to be. I am not a Call of Duty. I like Call of Duty, but I don't like Call of Duty multiplayer. Never really been my bag. But I love Quake. I loved Unreal. I love that era of shooters, and I missed them when they went away for a long time. And I'm so happy to see them back, including Unreal, which is Unreal Tournament's awesome, the new one.
Which is Unreal.
Yeah, it's very unreal. This is very much in that sort of vein. It's, you know, everyone wants to compare it to TF2, but the more I play it, the less I'm interested in calling it even remotely like that. The only real comparisons I would give is, you know, character-wise, there's definitely some, what do you call it? It's very stylized, and, you know, the characters are very goofy and have a lot of personality and stuff, and that's to be expected from Blizzard games generally, but I think the comparisons kind of end there. It feels more to me like if Unreal, Heroes of the Storm, and maybe the class-based system of a TF2 kind of had a baby, this would be it. And then it's got all that polish and tweak that Blizzard tends to give all their games, even at this early beta stage. So my first impression was, wow, I want to play this the rest of my life. Thank goodness it's here. Oh my gosh, I can't stop playing it. My second impression is, there is a lot of nuance and a lot of character, team composition, strategy, and tactic to be had. And I played a couple of games with you and Dills and some others. So I kind of have an idea of what it's like to play with friends and also to solo queue in that game. And I am more excited about it than I have been during the entirety of the lead up to this beta. I think it's awesome. I cannot wait to keep playing it. Every time I talk about it, I just want to play it. It's bringing shooters back in a way for me that that I haven't felt in a very long time, and I'm jazzed about it. So, yeah, first and second impressions are roughly the same. They're delivering on what we hoped they would deliver on, and now it's just a matter of getting this thing tested out, getting whatever content we're going to get, finding out how they're going to sell it, and then playing it until we're dead.
I absolutely agree. I think there's a lot of parallel to be made between Overwatch and other FPSs in the same genre, and things like Hearthstone with Magic and Heroes with LOL and Dota 2. And there are a lot of people, I think if we're talking about the way people are approaching Overwatch, there are a lot of people that are looking at it and coming from the perspective of the game they love and saying, oh, but it's not like this, or there's this aspect that is not similar to what I'm used to, so I consider it to be failing in that way. Or there are some elements of it that are different, and so I'm not seeing them because I'm focusing on the elements that I'm familiar with. And that is absolutely not my experience. I'm also not a super hardcore FPS nerd. I'm a lot more, you know, FPS, I like them here and there. I played Unreal. I played a little bit of Doom. I play some Overwatch, obviously. I'm sorry. I play some Destiny a lot. I played Call of Duty here and there as well. But this one has a lot of things to be liked for people who are not big FPS fans. There are characters that you can play very easily, even if you're not an expert at shooting stuff. There are characters that are always strategic in the way you're going to play them, because they actually don't need you to shoot stuff. So you're going to place turrets, you're going to heal people, you're going to make them move faster, stuff like that. And that contributes immensely to the victory of your team. There are elements that make you think, well, this game is broken initially, because it's a very focused on attack and defense. And there's always a point that you need to attack and defend. And one team attacks, one team defends. And sometimes the point is moving. It's a payload you have to move by being close to it. Sometimes it's a point that you have to get to. And when the people defending are putting up lots of turrets, then you think, there's no way I'm going to get through that. And you die repeatedly on that thing, and you spawn and you die and you spawn and you die, and you think, wow, this is broken. And I've heard some people saying that. But after, I don't know, a half an hour or an hour of play, you start understanding that some characters are perfect to counter those situations. And if you manage to play that character relatively well, then you can absolutely overcome that situation that you've been bashing your head against for half an hour before that. So there's a lot of strategy in that sense. And of course, you have to play that character better than the other team plays the character you're countering. But it absolutely works in that way. And it has so many characters, and they're all cool. All of them. Initially, there were some that I didn't like, but the more I'm playing, the more I'm finding out that all of them have like two or three super cool abilities that make them just fun to play. It's pure fun. And yeah, fun whether I'm winning or losing, actually, which is surprising.
Yeah, and there's great world building happening without... Blizzard does this really well, but they do this a lot with just personality and kind of just the way a character moves or does things, or the little quips they say. You start to get a feel for what this character is in a very real way, like in a way you would in a comic book or anything else. And they're able to do that without any story preface to this, other than the intro video we got at BlizzCon last year, which doesn't really say that much either. But I'm also noticing, and here's a little theory of mine, I think they have a lot more planned with the story than we think. We already know that they've mentioned things about, you know, they're excited about how to express the story of this game, even though they've gone...
Yeah, we thought about maybe comics or videos.
Sure,
or
some other stuff. But I'm not so sure it won't be more in-game. And my theory comes from this. I've noticed just a couple of things. There's the one city, I guess it's in London, in England.
Yeah, King's Row.
King's Row, where there's all those giant robots wandering around, kind of keeping a look on the city or whatever. There's something going on with that. That's more vague, and who knows? That could just be window dressing, but I think it's more the payload that you're escorting, specifically on the, I forgot which map, the Indian
Numambi.
Map.
Numambi. You're talking about the intro cinematic, right?
Yeah. Yes. And then in the payload, as you're walking through the street and walking this thing to the... When you're actually playing the game, it seems a little insane, and there's grenades everywhere, and you're trying to not die, and you're trying to kill everybody. So it's not exactly something you'd notice right off the bat. But if you're ever in skirmish and that thing's just parked in the middle of the road, go look at it. The gauntlet from the intro movie that the kid uses to blow what's her or to get Death or whoever it was in the hell out of there. They're not Death, Reaper. That gauntlet is in a containment pod riding on top of the payload, and you're trying to escort that thing somewhere important. That all leads me to believe there's way more under the under wraps here about story and character. And knowing what I know
you
about
Christmas. You think in-game? I don't think it's going to be in-game. But
Even if it's not overtly in-game in terms of them telling big, you know,
like single-player stuff, I don't think there's
going to
be that.
I don't think they're going to either. But I do think there'll be lots of little references so that when we do read that comic or see CGI absolutely. Video, we'll go, oh, yeah, that's that thing we were moving around in that one map. Or that makes sense why that clock is broken in that room or, you know, whatever. There'll be a lot of that sort of Easter egg-y stuff, which is very compelling and very fun to watch. What only thing that bothers me about this game is we're not even a week into the beta. Or I guess we're about a week in. And there are already people who are absolutely dominating the freaking game. And this is a very limited beta, but there are people who are just killing it. Now, I would say this. Even when you are on the receiving end of a really rough time, and I'm sure they're working on matchmaking and how to, you know, handle new players versus veterans and all that stuff. So that'll all come with time. But I'm still having an incredible amount of fun, even when I'm losing. And yeah. That's the hallmark of a strong sort of PvP experience. It's really, really good.
I agree. I think when I'm winning, I'm always having a good time. I think that's a given. When I'm losing, I would say maybe a third to half of the time, I'm kind of pissed off. Maybe a third. And two-thirds of the time, I'm just having a good time, and I recognize that they have that defense or attack locked down. And they they're just a better team. So it never feels like you're losing because you're not, the game is not letting you do what you want to do. You're recognizing the strategy of the other team, which is just better. And maybe your team sucks, but you know, that happens. And just playing the character, playing them, as I was saying, their abilities are so fun that when you get that one kill or that one use of your ability that works, it feels great. So, and so they have a controller, you know, console controller controls integrated in the game. It seems very likely they're going to announce at BlizzCon next week, at the end of this week, actually. Oh, my God. They're going to announce it's going to come to consoles. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe some kind of exclusivity with Microsoft, timed or otherwise. That's been in the, you know, rumor mill. And they also have a new character as well, which is super meta. It's D.Va, a Korean StarCraft II player. Yeah. So that's fun. Sorry, I interrupted you, Scott.
No. I was just going to say, I kind of interrupted you, but I just remember seeing this, that Major Nelson from Microsoft, from Xbox, is going to, he made a big announcement that he's going to be at BlizzCon. Didn't say he was going to do anything special, just that he'd be going. And this isn't the first year he's gone. He often goes. But to make an announcement that he'll be there has led some to believe that your theory about a Microsoft exclusive console thing, or at least a they get it early announcement or something.
Sounds possible for sure.
It may happen for real. So we'll see.
All right. I could talk about Overwatch nonstop. Seriously. If you want more, I'm doing regular videos now on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PatrickBeja, I believe it is. So I'm putting almost a video a day. I'm insane into Overwatch right now.
It's so good, dude. It's so worth, and those videos are great. They look good. There's tons of new video content out there, just generally, like everybody's doing stuff with it. So I feel like there is no shortage of really great looks at this game if you don't yet have a beta. And just a reminder to people, there are no such thing as beta keys. Do not fall for any of these fake beta key things. Your account has to be flagged. So if someone tries to just scam you into that, you are being scammed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as I was saying, if you want more Overwatch, you can go listen to The Instance from last week. We talked about it for an hour and a half. Overwatchers, we did an episode, a quick episode, first impressions, but we're going to do more as soon as Garrett is back from his wedding and BlizzCon. I'm guessing next week we're going to have an episode back and we're going to go nuts because I want to talk about it all day. Very quickly, Nintendo announced their first smartphone game, and it's a Mii-based chatting app, and it's been delayed. Instead of coming out in 2015, it's been delayed to 2016, probably, I think they said March or Q1, early Q2, something like that. Scott, you kind of called the fact that it was going to be a crappy game.
I kind of did. Yeah. I'm sad that I did. I wish I was wrong, but I was right. Yeah, it's not. Look, I don't know. Nobody should expect their very first foray into mass market mobile to be a new, never seen before Mario franchise starting game or something. I didn't expect that. I don't think anyone should expect that. I expected more, though, than just a little social me customization app. This feels real low rent to me, and it doesn't. It wouldn't have felt that way in like 2008 on a 3GS or something, but it does today, and it feels like there are a trillion apps like it, and I don't understand what they're thinking. At the very least, here's what I would have done. At the very least, I would have ported Super Mario Brothers Puzzles and Dragons. I would just port that straight over to mobile. It's dumb not to. That's a very good game. It's an extremely good version of Puzzles and Dragons. But aside from that, so, it would have been at least a game, you know?
I think I know what they're doing. There are two things. First of all, it's a very Japanese market-oriented game. It's kind of a safe place to chat, as Nintendo's games always are. They're safe, and that's one of their focuses. It's for children or Japanese people who are basically old children. So that's kind of what they're coming at. Coming from, but I also think it's a thing that is essentially a reason for them to get their infrastructure of their new network up and running. Basically, there's a new Nintendo accounts, Nintendo network that works on all smartphones and the PC and the consoles and everything. So, I think this is more about infrastructure than it is about the game itself. But it might be
right. Yeah, no, I don't know. It probably is. It feels like they have to establish something. I totally get it. But for them to get up and act like it's a huge announcement, and then the way they did the language to describe it. They didn't really, but the language they used to describe it is, you know, customize your Mii and interact with your friends in a whole new way. It's like, really? It's the most PR boilerplate garbage. Like, we need Nintendo, not... All right, fine, everyone. You've convinced us. We'll dip our toe just barely into the mobile water. If they're going to do this, they need to really do this. And at the very least, just come out and say, well, yeah, this first thing's just this dumb little social thing.
I'm sure the PR would be very happy with them saying, it's just this dumb little social thing. Don't even worry about it.
Okay, better than that. So, yeah, it's this really cool, awesome social thing. But also, we've got a bunch of stuff in the works. And they just, you know, instead they're just like, and Nintendo on mobile platforms, that's it.
That could be another title of the episode. All right. So, yeah, a little bit disappointing, but I'm sure 2016 will have more Nintendo stuff coming, and even more importantly, the NX. But talking about mobile, Respawn Entertainment has announced that Titanfall is coming to mobile, of all things. Okay, I guess maybe. I love Titanfall, but I don't know how it would work on mobile, but maybe. And the new Xbox One experience is coming finally on November 12. I don't like the UI on the Xbox One, so I'm looking forward to the new one.
Might be and a lot of people, my people I know who are in the Partners Program or whatever it's called, they seem
we'll get the preview,
they're fond of the changes, although I guess there's a lot of bugs right now, but it'll be nice to get that switched over. And you know, I don't know, some people want the blades back from the original Xbox 360. I cannot believe people are nostalgic for the Xbox 360 blades. It was a terrible interface. It was bad then, it'll be bad now. So I really hope it's nothing like that. I haven't actually seen any of this in action, so I don't know what to expect.
It's basically a panel that slides over from the left. Essentially,
right.
You know,
that when seems you're in all right. That seems like a thing to use to have. That's fine.
And to conclude,
Titanfall, real quick, on mobile, dumb idea. What is that going to be? That's going to be some watered down, terrible experience. All right, that's all I had to say on that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But you know, mobile is where it's at. All right, let's play the holiday season release bingo. Woohoo! We're going to be going through every game, and you tell us, Scott, if you are getting it blind, if you're kind of okay having it on your Christmas wish list, or if you're just not interested, okay?
Okay.
We're going to go through October, November, and December. October 6th, so some games are already out, obviously. October 6th, Rock Band 4.
For the holidays, I'm on the maybe for that, because it sounds like it'd be fun to do that again with the kids. But as a, if I was like living in my, by myself in an apartment, no.
Okay. Well, let's put Dragon Guitar Hero Live. Oh, for me, it's probably a non-interested, because I would put Guitar Hero Live on the bottom of my Christmas list. What about you?
Yeah, either of those. Both those games. I'm not ready. Everybody wants this. Again, nostalgia for 2008 is weird to me. So just not interested yet.
Dragon Quest Heroes came out the 13th.
I want it. There, that's my sound for wanting it, because primarily based on your recommendation, you seem to really like it.
I really, really like it. I really, really like it. There you go. Dragon Quest Heroes, it's surprising. I mean, I had a couple of good recommendations from friends I trust. I got it and played it for like 10 hours straight. It's really fun. It's one of those Romance of Three Kingdoms Musou games where you go in and destroy like hundreds of enemies. And there's this weird tower defense mechanic integrated into it a little bit, and you have those super abilities and you control four characters at the same time, or you know, you alternate between them. Super fun. I was very surprised. So I got it and I'm happy with it.
All right.
Yoshi's Woolly World came out the 16th.
I'll say yes.
Oh,
Not way up on my list, but I love Nintendo's magical gamey ideas they come up with, and this looks delightful, and I would like to play it. I don't think I'm going to have time, but I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, wish list for me, because yeah. I'm not sure I would have time.
Sure.
Tales of Zestiria, the JRPG that came out on the 20th of October.
I don't want that one.
Yeah, I don't want it either. It's, you know, JRPG. Some people like them, but I'm basically JRPG'd out.
Yeah, I don't need anymore.
DQ Heroes, and you know, the menus, like when you want to buy something, you have to go through 15 different confirmations in you know, in game. Anyway, Assassin's Creed Syndicate came out the 23rd with the most different reviews I've ever seen. Some people love it, some people hate it.
I'm fairly cautiously optimistic on this game, because I think they had a lot to prove over last year's dismal failure of the French one. So they have a chance to really redeem themselves. I like the setting, I like the look of it, and I'm a kind of an Assassin's Creed guy, so they may have me back interested after, you know, Black Flag I loved. So if we're back to those, you know, to that kind of smart Assassin's Creed game that I'm in, and from the people I like and read, they seem to think it is, so I think that one's on my list.
Okay, wish list for me. I'm going quickly because you don't have a lot of time. So
yeah, it's true.
Zelda Triforce Heroes came out the 23rd.
Nobody likes it. Don't want it.
Maybe if you're 12 and you have friends who have it and you play in the, you know, play school yard thing. But online, it doesn't make sense to play because you have to be three players. So
agreed.
I mean, you can control the robot. Anyway, no. Halo 5 just came out.
Yes, very interested.
Have an Xbox One, right?
No, I don't yet. And this may be the reason I get one. But I like what I'm hearing about it a lot more than I thought I would. And maybe I want some Halo in my life again. I could care less about the multiplayer, but I do think I wouldn't mind that campaign.
I got it. I have not had time to even launch it because I'm playing Overwatch so much. But I will play it, so I already have it.
Yeah.
Need for Speed coming out tomorrow, today, November 2nd.
Which list need to be reviews?
Okay, not for me, I think. I played the beta. It wasn't my thing.
Okay.
Call of Duty Blops 3 coming out the 6th.
I'm clear. I'm all good on Call of Duty for a while. I don't need any more.
Same. I was very disappointed with the future advanced warfare gun.
I liked that one a lot. I liked that quite a bit.
It was so dumb, though, the single player.
Yeah, it was. It had its moments, and I kind of enjoyed the cheese, but I guess I'm just... I can only do these now. It takes me a couple of years to be in the mood again, and I'm just not in the mood.
Yeah. And, you know, enjoying the cheese, you'd think the Frenchman would do that. But Yo-Kai Watch coming out the 6th.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. It's a 3DS game from Japan, very Japanese, basically a Pokemon kind of thing, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, well, not for me.
I'll put it on my, hey, I wonder what someone says about that.
Okay. Fallout 4, 11th.
That is totally, absolutely must play.
I'm
top of my list. Might be top of my list.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think it's middle of my list. Maybe even wish list. Yeah, wish list material. I'm not going to get it immediately.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a Fallout guy. And I loved, you know, Skyrim, but not Fallout. Sorry.
All right. All right.
StarCraft II Legacy of the Void coming out the 11th as well.
Pretty high on my list. I want that campaign pretty bad.
I'm going to get it anyway, whether I want it or not.
It, so I got it no matter what, but yeah.
Rise of the Tomb Raider coming out the 11th as well.
I'm irritated that that game went single platform through whatever deal they made. And even though I may get an Xbox anyway, it just bugs me that you go from multi-platform to single platform. So I'm kind of irritated with it. So probably on my wish list.
Okay. That's the main reason I bought my Xbox One. So, you know, I'm going to get it the moment it's available.
Yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront coming out the 17th.
I need to see more about final game and total content, but as for right now, that's pretty high on my list. I had a lot of fun with the beta, so I want to try.
Same here, and Star Wars Fever is going to settle in, so I'm guessing, well, actually just wish list, but I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be on the wish list, which I'm going to get.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, get this one. Yeah. Mario Tennis coming out the 20th. It's Ultra Smash, I believe.
No, I don't care. Yeah, I want to care. I just don't.
That's an apt description of the way I feel.
Sure.
And finally, Xenoblade Chronicles X on Wii U as well, coming out December 4th.
Let me give that one a big... I don't care.
Same here. So sad, though. You know, it's a big Wii U title, but you have to be into Japanese stuff to like that, which I am, but not that much. Right. So, yeah, there are probably a bunch of other games we didn't mention here. We couldn't go through every single thing, but if there is a game you're interested in, please come to FrenchSpin.com and let us know what we missed. And in the meantime, you can also go listen to Scott's shows, which you can find at...
frogpants.com for all of it, including our brand new show. Well, it's 5 episodes in, so we've been at it for 5 weeks, but our new show all about and for... the game Heroes of the Storm, also a Blizzard title. I'm so into that game right now that it was easy for us to justify doing a new show. So catch me, John, and Bo every week on the Core show. It's called Core. You can find it at frogpants.com/core. And for all the other shows and stuff, frogpants.com or my Twitter account, @ScottJohnson.
Fantastic. For me, it's @NotPatrick on Twitter, /NotPatrick on Facebook. And you can find my shows at frenchspin.com. And you can also find the show I was mentioning, Overwatchers, an Overwatch dedicated podcast, at amove.tv, which I do with my friend Garrett Weinsroll, who just got married, as I mentioned. So congratulations to him. He's been on the show a couple of times. Scott, thank you so much for being on. It was fun.
That's always fun, dude. I'll come back anytime. And as we get closer to all these holiday games, it'll be fun to maybe revisit and talk about what actually was good.
What we missed and we put in our I'm not interested bin that we ended up regretting.
Mario Tennis, game of the year. Who knew?
All right. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Scott, go do your other shows and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.